history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, if you take the time to ask a few questions and listen a little bit, you are going to hear some stories. Each week, we meet some heroes. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And I think we're going to check all those boxes today with 93-year-old Harold Hart of Raymond, California. Harold, how many people you think listening right now could point to Raymond, California on a map?
Well, I don't know how many stupid people there are.
It's not the first one that jumps out at you in California.
Are you sure of that?
You're kind of hidden back here in the golden foothills. But this is a pretty special area.
Golden foothills?
Well, they're golden because there's a drought. It's a little dry out there.
Well, it looks to me like the trees all died.
You got a lot of old oak trees out here. What other kind of trees you have on your property?
Of dead trees.
But you're easy to spot. Your driveway's easy to find because you are flying once a Marine, always a Marine, proud Semper Fi flag right on the edge of your driveway. How long have you done that? Have you always done that since you got out of the service?
I've had that flag in every place I've been. It's been there.
Why do you do that? Why is that so important?
By God, I want them to know it's me. And I know Flores in down at the VA hospital. He said there's one thing that Hart will never do, and he'll never forget who he is.
Well, we're going to try to learn a little bit about who he is, who you are. And I want to take you back when you were not in your 90s, but just a young boy growing up in the cornfields of Iowa. And that's literal. That's what you did? You worked in the cornfields growing up?
Well, I didn't just have to work in the cornfields.
What else did you do?
Broke horses to drive, to ride. I had cattle, and my dad was a farmer, and he bought the farm that we lived on.
Madison County, Iowa. Your growing up years through the Great Depression, is that something that you guys felt there? Did you have some hard times? Did that make life more difficult for you guys out on the farm?
It didn't with my dad. We always had plenty to eat, and we had all of our livestock. We sold hogs, 800 head one year. We had the sows that raised that many little pigs, and then we fed them corn. And when they topped out at about 180 pounds apiece, we sold them.
You never had a shortage of bacon either, huh?
Oh, we had all the meat we could eat.
When you were a boy, I know this is a long time ago, but do you remember the things that you dreamed about or thought about or said, hey, when I grow up, I'm going to do X, Y, Z?
No, I never had that because if I had of, my father would have said, son, forget it. You're going to do what I tell you to.
And
I did.
I believe it. So Winterset, Iowa.
Madison County.
Uh-huh.
Went to school on the bus every day and home every night on the same bus. And then I went to doing the chores. You know, we was milking 23 cows and selling milk by hand.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think I got that grip?
That's a cow milking grip.
Yeah.
But you remember what the cream tastes like when they say the cream rises to the top. You know where that expression came from.
I never ate or drank straight cream. I had it when it was butter.
And you guys probably had to churn your own butter, right?
Right. We had a butter churn that held 5 gallons.
In the basement or where?
No, it was in the house.
Uh-huh.
And there was a paddle, and you could put it in the crock and do this until it would make butter.
Uh-huh.
And that's where we got our butter. We never went to town to get it.
So was that
we
you?
We made it at home.
Was that you and your brother taking turns churning it?
Usually my brother and I.
When did you graduate high school?
when I was smart enough to.
I'm guessing if I'm doing the math, it might have been 1941.
42.
So that means your senior year of high school, something happened that changed the world a little bit. Do you remember December 7th, 1941, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor?
I remember hearing it over the radio.
I figured that's how you found out.
I was a scout and sniper at 400 yards. I could put a bullet in a 4-inch square every time. I never missed a 4-inch square with my rifle.
Where did that talent come from? Had you been shooting squirrels and possums and stuff back home in Iowa? Or
my
what?
Dad. He was in the First World War, and he was a hell of a shot.
He was in the Army?
Yep.
In Europe?
Yep. And he was known as the hitter. And then Dad taught me how to fire.
Uh-huh.
A rabbit. They're not really big animals. At 400 yards, I could hit a rabbit in the head every time.
Wow.
And they would turn a loop backwards.
Did your father ever tell you any stories about World War One?
And none of the things that they did. He was in the cavalry.
Uh-huh.
And he stayed in the Army 7 more months after the war was over because he wanted to make sure that they took care of the 21 horses that he had the control of.
Huh.
While he was there. He said, by God, I wasn't coming home until I knew that they was going to water and feed my horses.
How about that? So you come from a military family, and then in the middle of your senior year of high school, you find out Japan has launched this surprise attack on America.
Yep.
You were 89 pounds, and you wanted to go fight the Japanese.
When I graduated.
So you didn't have a weight room to go lift in, but you went out chopping trees to get muscles? Is that how it worked?
My father had me with muscle. You know, we fell trees and cut them into logs,
mm-hmm.
and made them into the winter's wood with axes. We didn't have them fancy saws that you start a bullet and cut them. We run them with a saw.
Back and forth, one guy on either side.
Until it fell off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Was there anything that was difficult for you to adjust to, going from a civilian to a Marine?
No. I had been brought up that whatever you were told to do, you did it.
Uh-huh. And why did you choose the Marine Corps as opposed to one of the other branches of service?
Not until each loom is silent and the shuttles cease to fly will God unfold his pattern and reveal the reasons why the dark threads are as needful in the weaver's skillful hand as the threads of gold and silver in the pattern God has planned. He knows, he loves, and he cares, and those that get the very best are the ones that let God make the choice. How did you like that?
Well, I like it. I'm sure everybody did, but I want to make sure that I understand why you jumped into that. I know that's a poem that you're quite fond of. It's very powerful for you. And I understand you first heard it after a family tragedy. You grew up with one brother and three sisters, but you had another sister who never got to grow up. She died before her first birthday.
She was 5 months and 5 days old when she passed away.
And that was a poem someone read in her memory, and it stuck with you. And so the message.
I took my wife to the cemetery
uh-huh.
to see where she was buried. That's 5 months and 5 days old.
And it sounds like maybe you're saying you know that you're not the one who's in control all the time.
Well, I knew that. I never tried to control anything or anybody.
Uh-huh.
And when I got in the Marine Corps, and they sent me out to the rifle range, and they was going to teach me to shoot. I'll never forget. The guy was an officer of some kind, and he told me he wanted me to shoot 400 yards and see if I could hit a 4-inch target.
Uh-huh.
And I said, why don't you put a rabbit out there and let him hop around? I'll take that. That's better than a 4-inch target hanging on a post. They wouldn't do that.
When you headed overseas, 1944, do you remember what you thought about that? Were you nervous? Was there any concern
No.
that you might not come back?
No, I never thought that.
How do you think your mother felt about it?
I bet she said, that little fart, there's no way they'll scare him into it.
Do you remember the first time somebody shot at you?
Oh, I don't know they were shooting at me.
What do you think they were shooting at?
The target someplace. And I didn't feel like the target.
I bet they felt differently.
I never was afraid.
Why not?
Why should I be?
Because they're trying to kill you.
Well, yeah, but they don't know. They don't know that not until each loom is silent and the shuttles cease to fly will God unfold his pattern and reveal the reasons why.
So you believed that God was protecting you?
I'm still here.
At 93. Do you remember some times where things came really close and there was no other explanation but God's protection?
I was the first Marine to set a foot on Iwo Jima. That was the worst, and up to this day, that's the worst fight, the worst battle that the Marines have ever been in.
And I want to hear more about it, but that was your last battle. There were three more before that, and maybe we can get to that after our first commercial break. Iwo Jima was Harold Hart's last battle because he was taken off the island unconscious 5 days into that battle. It's quite possible that that saved his life because there were nearly 7,000 Americans killed, 19,000 more wounded during that 36-day battle for a volcanic island that measures all of 9 square miles. The airfields on Iwo would become crucial strategic stops for bomber pilots flying over the months that followed, but that island came at a heavy, heavy price. I mentioned that number, nearly 7,000 Americans killed on that little island in a little more than a month. That is almost exactly how many Americans have died in Iraq and Afghanistan combined after 15 years of the War on Terror. Had he not been hospitalized on the fifth day of the battle for Iwo Jima, who knows whether Harold Hart would have made it through another month of fighting there. Well, he knows. I think you got a taste of that. And there's more to come. Check out the photos of this 93-year-old Marine at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.
Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 93-year-old Harold Hart of Raymond, California, originally from Winterset, Iowa, where part of his heritage is Choctaw. And you know, maybe I can't really say Raymond, California, because the Harts live on the other side of the Mariposa County line from that small town of approximately 1,200 people. The Marine Corps flag and the distinctive horse brand incorporating a heart shape let you know you've found the Hart home. Harold and his wife Josie have lived there since 1980. The horses that bore that brand were movie stars. They joined Harold in the Robbie Benson comedy Die Laughing. Maybe you should go rent that or dial it up on Netflix and look for Harold. And even if you've never seen that film, there's still a good chance that you've seen Harold Hart's face somewhere. He made dozens of commercials in decades as a member of the Screen Actors Guild. TV commercials for Kentucky Fried Chicken, for Chevy Trucks, for Tab Cola. Remember that? Well, none of that would have ever happened if Harold Hart had not survived 4 Pacific battles with the 4th Marine Division in World War II. The first one was a quick one, but nearly a fatal one for Harold. Operation Flintlock targeted the Kwajalein Atoll in the Marshall Islands, and with the Army handling the southern end, the 4th Marine Division invaded the twin islands in the north called Roy and Namur in the last day of January 1944. Over the next 4 days, 190 Marines from that division would lose their lives, another 547 wounded. It was Harold Hart's first battle. He was just 20 years old. And the concussion from being too close to an explosion would leave him unconscious for hours. He seems to alternate between downplaying the danger and recalling that air of invincibility he felt, but one thing is clear. He was too close to a lot of things that could have claimed his life. The next battle, 4 months later, was a lot longer and even deadlier for the 4th Marine Division. Over 1,000 from the division were killed in the 25-day battle for Saipan. Nearly 5,000 more wounded. And Mr. Hart, I hear you started to earn quite a reputation there as a fearless scout.
And sniper.
Explain that to us. How does that work?
What?
When you're a scout, that means you have to
go out front.
At night, right?
Anytime.
To try to figure out where the enemy is.
Yeah.
Doesn't that make you vulnerable?
Yeah, but I was little.
Yeah?
And
so you didn't think they'd hit you because you were little?
They never had the chance.
Oh, I think they had lots of chances.
I have crawled on my belly over 100 yards in sand. Mm-hmm. I'm still here, and I'll be here as long as God wants me.
I love if you could explain for us who've never been out there.
I had spotters that would locate the Japs that were hiding in anything during the day. And they would come to me, and I was the scout. And by God, a good one.
So then you'd go out.
They would come to me, and they would tell me where there was. Usually three Japs would be in a hole that they dug. And they would point them out to where and explain to me how to get there and not be seen and whatever. Then as soon as it got dark, I'd crawl out. And they didn't know it until they were dead.
That was your job. Go out and find the guy someone had spotted.
And a well-known scout and sniper.
So throughout the Pacific, and especially on some of these places you were, Saipan was notorious for it, Iwo Jima too. But there were times where you knew the Japanese had a position in caves or bunkers, blockhouses.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you do about that? How would you guys try to change
that? At night, I could crawl on my belly in the sand or dirt or whatever and take along explosives and blow everybody up.
And you did that?
I did that.
More than once?
Yeah.
When you lay those charges, how far away are you by the time they go off?
Well, usually I'd try to put enough fuse on it that I could get at least 10 yards.
So you're still dealing with the effects of that explosion.
Yeah.
What did that do to you, being so close to those kind of explosions?
Oh, I thought God's taking care of me.
Well, I'm just thinking it's big enough and strong enough to give you a concussion.
Well, I don't know what a concussion does, but it didn't hurt me. Maybe I gritted my teeth hard enough that it didn't rattle them.
There is a photograph in the official history of the 4th Marine Division from World War II, which you have kept in really good condition. And I'm going to give the credit for that to your wife, Josie, more than you, that it still is in such great condition. But there's a photo in there of a couple cows that are yoked up and being used to pull some of your equipment.
One of them is a bull and the other is a cow.
So there's a bull and there's a cow.
And they're hooked on. I talked to them enough that they let me catch them.
So these were...
They belonged to people on the island.
But with war coming to the island of Saipan...
I had to get something to pull those big bull carts. And, do you have a picture in there?
Yeah, I was just looking at it. So you see a bull, and you tell your commanding officer, I'm going to go catch that bull?
Yeah.
So how do you do that?
Well, how do I do that?
Yeah.
Old Gus McCarthy... When I tell him I'm going to do something, he says, well, go ahead. There's no way Gus would try to stop me.
So how did you do it, though? What did you have to do to catch that bull?
He, I just c- kept walking up closer and closer to him. And whenever I'd get to where I could scratch him on the head or the ear, I was a farm kid.
Uh-huh.
I was used to handling cattle and bulls and stuff. So I caught the bull first. He had a ring in his nose already, and I caught him by that and put a rope on it, and I could lead him any place I wanted to go. Then I hitched him onto the bull cart, and we had it loaded with ammunition and food and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I used my bull, and the next day a heifer showed up. I think she must have been in heat, but she saw the bull, and I saw her, and I thought, well, there's another one to catch the next cart. And I had the two of them, and I had the heifer with her cart tied on the back end of my bull with his cart, and I hauled all of the groceries and the everything for the whole regiment, for the 4th Marine Division. And if you look, when you see the bull pulling the cart,
yeah,
way back behind is the heifer pulling one.
And I do have that photo up at hometownheroesradio.com and on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And I guess it's a good thing they snapped that photo when they did, because otherwise there would be no evidence, because I understand your bull was killed there on Saipan.
Somebody shot him.
One of your planes?
One of the Marines. I don't know who done it. Nobody would order to it.
It happened during the night? You found it dead in the morning?
Yeah.
I bet that made you angry.
It sure as hell it did.
Because then there wasn't any more bull to pull all that stuff for you.
That's right.
So your bull didn't make it out of Saipan, but there were some civilians that did, and I understand it was because of you. You were looking for Japanese soldiers in a cliffside cave and discovered some natives hiding out there?
No, I saw them in a distance,
uh-huh,
going in and out of that hole in the wall, and that was where I went out to see. And they were, when you see little kids running, you want to help them.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I did.
So this little boy lived on Saipan.
Uh-huh.
And you saw him, and he told you where his family was?
Yeah, in his cave.
So what did you do?
Went and got him.
You got them out of the cave?
Sure, they were going to get killed in it.
And where'd you take them?
Took them out of sight, out of sound, and where they could be hid.
And that little boy, he asked you if he could come back to America with you?
I don't remember exactly, because at that point in time I was a little bit nervous to remember everything he said.
Uh-huh.
But he wanted to go with me, but I did bring him back to the United States.
Right. But you got him out of harm's way.
Yep.
Good chance you saved that family's life.
Yeah.
And who knows how many kids and grandkids have been born since then.
Well, that's true.
Was there a risk in you doing that?
Oh, hell yes.
Could have gotten yourself killed.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what's out there.
I never felt that I was close to death.
Uh-huh.
I just knew, don't ask me why, I knew that I was going to be okay.
I think this kind of fits with what you've been sharing with us here. This was from January of 1945. It's a division decoration order. Says the Commanding General, 4th Marine Division, has commended the officers and men shown below for excellent service as set forth in the citation following their respective names. And there's only one name. It's PFC Harold H. Hart. It says, for excellent service in the prosecution of his duties as an automatic rifleman during the action against enemy Japanese forces in the invasion and capture of Saipan and Tinian from June 15th to August 1st, 1944. His willingness to close with the enemy in caves and pockets of resistance was highly commendable. They thought you did a pretty good job.
Who wrote that?
It was Colonel Batchelder, Chief of Staff, U.S. Marine Corps. What are you proud of?
Nothing. I did everything that I thought I should.
Yeah?
And I'm not necessarily proud of it.
Are you proud that you served your country?
Absolutely. I know one thing. God had to be looking out for me.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I had the BAR with the telescope on it that I took off my sniper rifle.
I want to ask you about that. So you put a telescopic lens on a Browning automatic rifle. Had you seen anybody else do that?
No, I didn't need to. And put a tube on it that I could load 80 bullets at one shot.
So that gave you an advantage that the enemy couldn't anticipate, that you had that kind of accuracy from a range that they didn't expect you to have.
Yeah.
What can you tell me about the guys you served with? What kind of guys were they?
Well, the only ones that I had anything to do with, to get acquainted with, and if they had a problem, I would try to help them solve it. And I kind of got known for that before the war was over.
Mm-hmm.
Go talk to Hart. He'll help you.
Hmm.
And I talked to a lot of guys that were going to commit suicide. Said, I've had all. I can't take it. I want to die. I think tonight I'm going to pull the trigger with my toe.
Wow.
A good many guys said that.
What did you say to them to convince them otherwise?
I said, now which toe is it? The big toe. I said, well, now you sit back down there and take your shoe off, and I'll show you what you'll need to do. And they would sit down and take their shoe off, and I would pull their big toe over and put their leg on my knee, and I'd get my pot and my knife out, and I said, now all I got to do is cut this big toe off, and you got nothing to pull the trigger with. But that's me. I wasn't any different then than I am now.
Uh-huh.
And they'd say, oh, Hart, and they'd get up and leave. But they was still there the next day.
Snapped them out of it.
The next day and the next day.
That's
they
great.
They was afraid I was going to get them in bed. One of them that had been planning on cutting himself up or pulling the trigger with his
yeah.
I had his toe. And he woke up screaming bloody murder. Hart, get out of here.
So he was asleep,
yeah,
and you were holding his toe with your knife in the other hand?
Oh, yeah.
I guess that got your point across.
Yeah, it did.
That's classic.
But that's I great. Always had a good time. My name is H-H-H.
Yeah.
H-A-R, H-A-R, H-A-R. Har, har, har. The happiest man in the world.
Yeah.
Harold Harrison Hart.
Can't go wrong with har, har, har. Where did you guys sleep? On these islands?
In a hole in the ground. We dug our bed so that if they happen to have air bust, if you stick your head up and they see you.
I've heard Iwo Jima was not easy to dig on.
No.
With all that volcanic sand.
No. Yeah. You got your... That was funny. We'd get our bed dug on Iwo Jima. And by the time you got in it, laid down, turned over twice, it was full again. I mean, you was in a sand pile.
Because it would just roll in from the edges.
Yeah. The guys was hollering at one another, hey, have you chewed any yet? But anyway, there was always humor. There was always Marines having fun.
And we're getting the idea that Harold Hart, a.k.a. Har Har Har, always finds a way to keep things fun, even though many of the situations presented anything but fun. If you go online to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll find a photo of Harold and his wife Josie on the front porch of the rural property they share with a horse, two mules, and a donkey named Hacksaw. And as we head to break here, that reminds me to give you a heads up on a movie hitting theaters soon. Hacksaw Ridge tells the incredible true story of a conscientious objector who refused to carry a weapon and was even ridiculed for that. But eventually, medic Desmond Doss became an incredible hero on Okinawa, saving so many lives in such a unique way that he was given the Medal of Honor. That movie again, Hacksaw Ridge, it's coming soon to theaters near you. And speaking of the Medal of Honor, an incredible 23 Marines were given our nation's highest honor for their actions on Iwo Jima. One of them was Harold Hart's captain, mentor, and friend. We'll hear about that when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say, I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328. Paul Everett's RV Country has 8 locations in 5 western states, including Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, right off the I-5, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. Over 55 years of experience serving the needs of RVers across the country and proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. Find a location near you by visiting RVCountry.com.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country, with 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our colorful conversation this week with Harold Hart, 93 years young, and still delivering a handshake that belies his cow milking roots in Iowa. He's lived in California for decades now with his wife, Josie, who has her own connection to World War II. She grew up in France, and she would have never been born if her father, who was captured by the Germans during the war and put into a forced labor camp, hadn't survived thanks to people who helped him escape that camp. Harold is pretty fortunate to be alive himself. 4 battles with the Fighting Fourth, the 4th Marine Division in the Pacific, gave him 3 severe concussions that left him unconscious for long periods of time, and also nerve damage in his back that has affected him for the more than 70 years since. He's also dealt with flashbacks that wake him up in the middle of the night. His wife has to keep a pot of coffee on for those times when he just can't get back to sleep. It's still too real, so long after the war. Harold had lost fellow Marines at Roy Namur, at Saipan, at Tinian, but nothing compared to the devastation and destruction that he would witness on Iwo Jima. Of the nearly 7,000 Americans killed there, over 1,800 came from the 4th Marine Division. And with another 7,000 from the Fighting 4th wounded on Iwo, the division was literally at half strength by the time the island was secure. But there was no way to anticipate any of that as Harold Hart and his fellow Marines approached the island on February 19, 1945. They had no idea that those 9 square miles of earth were covered with tunnels and caves where Japanese forces had endured heavy pre-invasion bombardment from American planes. Harold was among the first Marines to hit the beaches that day in LCVPs.
And I went back to the coxswain that was running over the landing craft.
Yeah.
I went back and I said, I'm going to unlatch the ramp in front, unhook it. When you're 500 to 700 yards away, you floorboard this and hit that sand pile over there as hard as you can go and put this thing up on that beach. And he said, Hart, I'm not allowed to do that. And I said, then get out of there and let me have it. I'll do it. And he said, no, he said, I'll do it, I'll do it. Then he went out about 500 to 700 yards, turned it around, and we heard it. I was in it.
But he revved it up?
Wide open. And I'd already went and unlatched the ramp in front.
Right.
And when it was wide open, and he headed her for the beach, I said to everybody, I said, get a hold of something, we're going to hit the beach. Well, I don't think anybody believed me, but they all got up off of the floor of the ramp whenever we hit the beach.
So that ramp went down and you ran out onto that beach.
I was the first one off. You know, death is never anything that anybody flinches from. You know that it's going to happen. You don't know it's you. You don't know it's your best friend. You don't know what's 1 or 10, but you ignore it. It's your job. Kill so they can't kill you.
Did you ever think it was going to be you?
No.
Never?
No, because I knew God would take care of me. I had went to church a few times. And I always knew that my time hasn't come yet. And by God, it hasn't come yet.
But there were times that guys around you did get killed. guys doing the same kinds of things that you were doing.
I've had them get killed that was holding my hand.
You had guys that got hit, and you're there with them holding their hand, and they're calling for their mother.
Yep.
What can you do for them?
Just tell them that you'll take care of them, and they'll be okay. It was a lie, maybe, but I know that there was a few that knew because of me they are here.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I don't want to leave this out. I almost forgot, and I don't want to forget to bring up a pretty remarkable story that you were a crucial part of. You had a friend who was shot right when you guys made a landing, and you saw him floating there in the water.
And I picked him up out of the water.
He gets shot in the head. You picked him up out of the water.
Mm-hmm. And threw him back in the boat.
Back in the boat. And what'd the guy on the boat say?
Yeah, I said you're not supposed to put...
Because his job was to drop you guys off and get out of there. He wasn't supposed to be evacuating any wounded.
Yeah. So but I changed his mind.
So you threatened to shoot...
Yeah.
...the coxswain of the boat if he didn't take your wounded buddy back.
Yeah.
So they take him back. He gets first aid. He survived.
Yes.
And you got to go see him later?
Yep. His dad. I thought he was going to choke me to death. Hug at me.
What do you think would have happened to him if you didn't throw him back in that boat?
I had to drown.
He was in the water, and he'd been shot in the head. He was unconscious.
Yeah.
He was gone.
Yeah.
Dead, if you don't pick him up. So later on, you got to meet his wife.
Uh-huh. His family.
And his children.
Uh-huh.
And those children would have never been born if you hadn't pulled them out of the water.
That's right.
I imagine that's one of the more satisfying things that you got to do in the war.
But I never thought anything of it. Uh-huh. It was just something that had to happen.
Did he ever say that to you? Did he ever say thank you for saving my life?
Oh, yeah. And his wife did. Whenever he told his wife that I had saved his life, that made her think that I was pretty good.
Well, there was somebody else who apparently felt that way. Your captain, Joseph Jeremiah McCarthy. You guys called him Gus. You still have some letters from him. I've even put up a couple pictures at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. But on your third day there on Iwo Jima, Gus McCarthy did something that earned him the Medal of Honor. And I'm pretty sure you were with him in Company G that day. Here's what his Medal of Honor citation says. Determined to break through the enemy's cross-island defenses, Captain McCarthy acted on his own initiative when his company advance was held up by uninterrupted Japanese rifle, machine gun, and high-velocity 47-millimeter fire during the approach to Motoyama Airfield No. 2. Quickly organizing a demolitions and flamethrower team to accompany his picked rifle squad, he fearlessly led the way across 75 yards of fire-swept ground, charged a heavily fortified pillbox on the ridge of the front, and personally hurling hand grenades into the emplacement as he directed the combined operations of his small assault group, completely destroyed the hostile installation. Spotting two Japanese soldiers attempting an escape from the shattered pillbox, he boldly stood upright in full view of the enemy and dispatched both troops before advancing to a second emplacement under greatly intensified fire, and then blasted the strong fortifications with a well-planned demolitions attack. Subsequently entering the ruins, he found a Japanese soldier taking aim at one of our men, and with alert presence of mind, jumped the enemy, disarmed, and shot him with his own weapon. Then, intent on smashing through the narrow breach, he rallied the remainder of his company and pressed a full attack with furious aggressiveness until he had neutralized all resistance and captured the ridge. An inspiring leader and indomitable fighter, Captain McCarthy consistently disregarded all personal danger during the fierce conflict and, by his brilliant professional skill, daring tactics, and tenacious perseverance in the face of overwhelming odds, contributed materially to the success of his division's operations against this savagely defended outpost of the Japanese Empire. His cool decision and outstanding valor reflect the highest credit upon Captain McCarthy and enhance the finest traditions of the U.S. Naval Service. So again, that is the Medal of Honor citation for your captain, your mentor, Gus McCarthy. And you were there with him when all that was happening?
Sure.
So this was an airfield, so it's wide open. There's nothing to hide behind. And the Japanese are firing at you.
And they eventually did start screaming their bonsai, bonsai, and approaching.
Uh-huh.
But I was the only Marine that I know of. Now, there may have been another one or two. I took the scope off of that and put on my BAR. And I had my VAR loaded with 80 bullets. Makes it a little heavy.
I would imagine so. So that allowed you to neutralize that bonsai charge and prevent them from reaching you.
Uh-huh. Because as soon as they came across the airport, as soon as their head come into sight, I would point that finger at them. I'd still do this, shooting at anything. I point my finger at the target, but I never pulled the trigger with that finger.
So you use your pointer finger to point and your middle finger to pull the trigger.
That finger gives you a chance or a time to not get excited. Just hold it there until you say, I got him, and then you pull that trigger.
This incident in February of 45 on Iwo Jima, you have an airfield that would prove to be very strategically important in the war because it allowed the bombers to have a place to land and be able to reach their targets in Japan. That was one of the key parts of that Battle of Iwo Jima that cost so many lives. But this airfield is where you're fighting. And some Marines said it was almost impossible to cross even once.
Yeah.
But you went out there. You took wounded back across it.
Carried them.
You carried wounded back across the airfield while they're shooting at you.
Yeah.
And then you went back and shot at them some more. And then you did the same thing over and over
again. Well, I wanted to keep them happy.
Keep who happy?
The Japs.
To give them a target?
Yeah, whenever I'd shoot at them, then they could shoot at me. But they never hit me.
How close did they come?
God's looking out for me.
But how close did they come? What do you think the closest one of the enemy rounds
came
to the U.S.?
I could hear them snap whenever they went by.
So within a few feet?
Yeah.
If not less?
Yeah. Just ignore it. I when you feel that the good Lord upstairs is taking care of you, you get pretty tough.
You felt invincible?
Yeah. That's what 1991, when we had our last reunion, and old Gus McCarthy, after everybody had run off with what they had done, Gus said, I've been listening to all this, but he said, there's a Marine in the room tonight that I want you to meet. And he said, Hart, would you come here? So I walked over. He put his arm around my shoulders, and he said, by God, he said, this is the toughest Marine that ever pulled up a rifle. He said, this is a true Marine. He never stopped. He said, he's my boy.
He said, you were the son he never had?
Yeah.
So you guys were close together throughout all these battles?
We were, and the reason being, he found out and knew that my father was in the infantry.
What kind of guy was McCarthy?
He was great. Old Joseph Jeremiah McCarthy. Gus.
Was he a tough guy?
Right, he was tough. But nobody challenged him. He said whenever Hart cook off, he knew that he was going to do it. He was sure that God was going to take care of him. And I was stood up in 1991, and I said, my mother and father took me to church every Sunday for many years before I went to the Marine Corps. And I always felt that I was talking to the man upstairs when I said, God, take care of me. And I said, I'm still here.
Hey, when they say, once a Marine, always a Marine.
Did you see that flag out front?
I did.
On the gate?
What does that mean to you? Once a Marine, always a Marine.
That's the truth. I still think if anybody gets in my way, I'm probably going to grab him by his crotch and his shoulder and turn him upside down, head first, on a rock.
I'm a little afraid to ask you this, because I'm not sure what you're going to say.
Well, nobody else is either.
I'm sure you've heard about the quarterback who, in protest, decided to not stand anymore for the national anthem. Did you hear about that?
No, I did not.
One of the 49ers quarterbacks?
Don't tell me, or I'll go look him up.
How does that make you feel?
I'll guarantee you one thing. I don't care who he is or how big. I ain't kidding. the first thing I'll do is grab him right there and my thumb underneath that point there. 5 seconds, he's going to sleep, and I'll just throw him down on the ground and go away. He'll come back open.
Why does that upset you so much, that someone would refuse to stand for the anthem?
Because that's our flag. Where's the flag here?
Right in front. You fly it every day.
And there's one here on the porch.
Yep.
And the one down at the gate.
Why do you fly that flag? What does it mean to you?
Because by God, this country earned it.
One thing that I have to ask anyone who was on Iwo Jima, and not everybody saw this, but a lot of people did, because it's not that big an island, and there's just one big mountain on one end of it, Mount Suribachi.
Yeah.
That was the scene of maybe the most famous photograph in history.
Yeah.
Did you see that flag flying on top of that mountain?
Yeah.
Where were you when you saw it?
I was shooting at things that was moving way out there. A lot of our fighting was 500 to 700 yards.
Uh-huh.
And you had to, if you had the Shinerva shakes, don't even try.
What did it mean to you when you saw the Stars and Stripes up on top of Suribachi?
I was just hoping they was paying attention. I never thought it was anything great.
You had no idea that, from your perspective, that little flag sitting up there was going to have so much power as an image.
That they was taking pictures of it.
Sure. What's your perspective on that now?
Well, I'm sure so glad they did what they did, that they did take pictures of it.
A couple years ago now, you got to go with your son. One of the first things you do on that honor flight in Washington, D.C., is you go to the Marine Corps Memorial. And here is a giant statue of those Marines atop Mount Suribachi raising the flag. And the names of every battle that you are in are inscribed on that monument. And there's also a quote from Admiral Nimitz on that monument.
Uh-huh.
And it says, among the Marines in the Pacific, uncommon valor was a common virtue. What does that quote mean to you?
It's certainly the truth. You had to know that God was looking after you, or you would never have been there.
Was that Marine Corps monument your favorite part of the trip?
Yes.
Well, what about the World War II memorial, where they've got gold stars symbolizing 406,000 Americans who didn't get to come home the way you did?
It meant everything to me to get to take my son with me and let him, because when we got back, he said, my God, Dad, how did you ever get me and get to be here? How was that? And I said, not until each loom is silent and the shuttle ceased to fly will God unfold his pattern and reveal the reason why the dark threads are as needful in the weaver's skillful hand as the threads of gold and silver in the fat pattern God has planned. He knows, he loves, and he cares, and he'll take care of you if you really need it.
So I want to make sure everybody heard that. What your son said to you after that honor flight, he's saying, I shouldn't be here. I should have never been born because you should have never survived what you went through.
Uh-huh.
That's what he was saying.
Yeah.
And how many of the rest of us can that also be said of? We're out of time, but Harold H. Hart, har, 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 thank you for serving our country. Thank you for sharing your story and your personality with us today. Again, for photos of Mr. Hart then and now, check out hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. That's the program for today. I want to thank you for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again, as Harold Hart knows firsthand from those 4 battles in the Pacific, that freedom is not free. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that honor flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. but it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.